right? What successes have we had? So definitely individual success. If you find somebody who, you know, is out there with over 200 or over 180, and we are able to intervene there and then, that's a success on a personal level, not a success for the program, because that's not necessarily what we're studying. So we try to get them to their doctor immediately and intervene and so on and so forth. But in terms of the program, we have just started training church people to help us deliver these online programs. And I consider that a success, because what it means is that it's no longer us, the research community, coming in and doing something. We're now training people within the church to deliver this program and to help the community manage itself. We're now thinking about sustainability. We're thinking beyond the church. We're thinking, how can these people then help others? And in terms of successes, we have found, we're looking for people who are uncontrolled, and about 25% of the people that we've tested have been uncontrolled and therefore eligible for our study.
So one of the other things that frustrates physicians would be amongst things such as not knowing the names of your medications and being able to describe them in terms of color and size or the packaging, is that persons don't know their numbers. Persons don't yes. know what a particular number means. So it's all well and good for us to say, go get a blood pressure machine, go get a blood sugar machine, yes. and you get a reading of 3 and do absolutely nothing about it on your blood sugar, or you take your blood yes. pressure and you see 196 on 100 and you say, okay, I'll just write it down for the doctor.
Yes.
So what value are you taking for uncontrolled?
Yeah, we're pretty low. We take anything above 130 on 80 as uncontrolled, because we have gone with the latest JNC8 guidelines in terms of our control measures. I know that the world hypertension thing still uses, global hypertension, they still use 140 on 90.
40 on 90. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the 130 on 80 is really saying, because above 130 on 80, you still have cardiovascular risk. You're still looking at that increased risk of heart attacks and that increased risk of strokes. So we've said anything above 130 on 80 is uncontrolled. So we, to be honest, in the churches themselves, we have been doing the teaching. So we talk to everybody and we tell about numbers. And I like to talk with interaction. So people are putting up their hands and they're telling me different numbers and so on. So it's a teaching session every time we go, and it's not me alone. I work with other doctors as well. I work with nurses who are also doing the teaching. Medical students are helping. So it's, you know, it's a general program that we're doing, educating people about their numbers, so that when they come back to you, they can say, well, oh, look, I know that mine was one thing and it didn't go over 118. And, you know, and so we're again, supporting the community so that when they come to the doctors, they can say, oh, I learned something new. We're, again, just pushing that community support, that self-management support for the healthcare system.
Now, this is what it's all about. If you can educate patients and they get that understanding to the fact that they should not be putting pigtails in the water to boil rice, believe you me, I was having a consultation with a patient and we were trying to go through salt. And she told me she does not put any salt in her pot. I learned over the years that the next question after that is, do you use those seasoned cubes or do
yes.
you use a pigtail?
Yes.
And the answer was yes to the pigtail. So whilst yes. in her mind, she was not physically pouring salt into the pot,
yes.
she certainly was adding salt to the pot.
Yes.
So you mentioned there just now the risk factors for cardiovascular disease. So we're on the train of educating our patients. What are some of the other risk factors for cardiovascular disease?
Right. So of course there's hypertension, because hypertension is the number one risk factor for cardiovascular disease. It's, you know, contributes a higher percentage of cardiovascular disease than any other thing. Diabetes is also a risk factor. High cholesterol is a risk factor. And what do those things have in common? Our diet. You know, our physical activity.
Or
so we were actually taught or lack thereof, or lack thereof, physical inactivity. So we were talking a lot about that. I was at a church today, just, you know, doing education. We were talking about that. And so, and I started to talk about the soy sauce. People were not happy. You know, they were like, do we have to take that out, really? Yeah, you know, and we were talking about ways to reduce that, and the importance of reducing gradually, because, you know, I'm Bajan too. Yeah, I'm Bajan too. I like pork. There's no doubt about it. You know, like a little meat here and there. But if we can do those things in moderation and reduce, we are, it's just another step, another thing that we can do. So in the sessions, we are showing people a high salt diet, and we're showing them the saturated diets. We're helping them to read labels, read food labels, because it really all comes back to our diet and our physical inactivity, then putting us at risk for obesity, for hypertension, for diabetes, for high cholesterol, et cetera. We've had some really, really good talks. People were very engaged. There was one church I went to where we did some physical activity. So not just, you know, the talking, but we also did a little line dancing. And one lady said, okay, I'm ready now. I am going to go and go start walking, because we got up there and we started doing things. So physical activity, diet are like the underlying risk factors, I would say, for many of these chronic diseases.
One of the advantages I believe that this community program will have is support. You do get that one-on-one support from your physician, yes, but there's nothing like community support or family support for an individual who has decided that he or she is going to try to make a change in his or her lifestyle. There are many people who are not motivated to get up and go and walk around the neighborhood by themselves. But if the next door neighbor comes at 5 o'clock and knocks on your door, you're not going to be inclined to tell them you're not going anywhere. Grudgingly, you're going to get up and say, all right, come in, man, just give me 10 minutes. And you would have excused yourself from exercising. But because of that support, you now go ahead and you reap that benefit of support. So certainly community support and family support would be important in managing.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because you asked me for risk factors and I did not mention one of the most important ones, which is lack of support. So if you have somebody who is socially isolated, the Interheart study showed that that was one of the biggest risk factors as well for heart disease. Persons who don't have support, who don't have that family support, that person to take them to the doctor, go to the doctor with them. And one of the advantages, of the workshop that we're running is that there are 8 to 12 people in the workshop. So you're forming a community within that workshop that's helping you to manage your condition. Did you also know a little tidbit that men who are married live longer? Why is that? Because they have that marital support. The wives, yes, that is right. That is absolutely correct. Men who are married live longer because they have that support. Yeah, because they have that person to take them to the doctor and force them to go. Yeah, that is extremely important. It's extremely important.
What is that, Gretchen? That is a reason for one to become wed, to live longer?
You go ahead, Doc. I really want to say something on that, but it's not a comedy program, it's a doctor's program, so I'll stay clear of it. Go ahead. They say that married men live longer. Okay.
They do.
I'm going to look for the evidence and email it to you.
They don't stay home very often. Anyhow, carry on,
Smarty. That was not a compound that we looked at. Anyway.
Go ahead.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yes, for those of you who are hearing this laughter and wondering what's going on, this is the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life, believe it or not. They do say that laughter is the best medicine. And we are in this evening with Dr. Natasha Sobers, epidemiologist, researcher, doing some great work over there at the George Allen Center for GACDRC, George Allen Chronic
Disease Research Center. Right, Chronic Disease Research Center, yes.
Yes, it's right there at the bottom of Colima Rock. I think the junction of Colima Rock and Martindale Road.
Gemma's Lane, Colmar Rock and Gemma's
Lane. Right on Gemma's Lane, right. It's a stone's throw over from the hospital if you don't know it, and there's a big blue and white sign out in the front, so you can see it, where the doctors, nurses, researchers over there are really doing some wonderful work in terms of getting our population to where it should be. So we were looking at the structure of the healthcare system and how this program could help to improve, as it were, the structure of healthcare. Is that one of the things that you think that this program can do in the long term?
I think that we can certainly lend support to what is happening within the healthcare system itself, the health delivery system. We in no way, you know, want to replace physicians or anything like that. That's not what this is about. This is a community base. And as I said, the chronic care model, which is a, you know, a model by WHO to tell us how best to manage chronic diseases, it talks about the health system, but it also talks about community management and self-management support. And those are two areas that we have been falling down in. And I think that this program is the beginning of us starting to engage the community a little bit more, a lot more in promoting health, in preventing disease. And also, this is a program that's going to help with the self-management. So self-management is also, we also teach, how can you communicate with your doctor? You know, a lot of people who don't want to ask their doctor questions.
Yes.
They come and the doctor might be there. Okay, what's happening? Well, nothing. I'm okay. I'm good. And then, you know, they might get into a little rapport. And then, you know, as they're walking up the door, well, you see, my
door
son.
Handle,
yes, the door handle. Yes. My son going up there. And now you're talking about stress. Now they're starting to open up. So in the workshops, we actually teach that as well. Teach about how to communicate with your doctor. How to think. So I definitely see this as a program that can help us help the community support the healthcare system in the way that it should always be doing, and help with screening activities. We've been doing a lot of screening over the years, and people start to ask, so what are we doing with this screening? But this is focused screening. This is screening that says, I'm going to screen you if there's a problem, I'm putting you into a program. And this is just the beginning of where we want to go. So I definitely see this as being able to assist the healthcare system in managing hypertension in the first place, diabetes. That's what I told you, Dr. Quimby is working on that aspect. Because, you know, generally as a UV, we don't just want to speak about supporting our community. We want to actually support our community. That's why this implementation research, implementing systems, implementing programs, this is so important for our community.
Yeah, I'm certain there are some skeptics saying there are so many programs that have been started, so many big ventures, so many small ventures, and you hear about them and then you don't hear about them again. But this one, I think, has the advantage that it's focused in the community per se, not a change that's focused within the healthcare setting proper, and where it might be dependent upon the amount of money that's available, might be dependent upon the staff that's available in the healthcare. And that staff in the healthcare system, they're already rinsed out to all,
yes,
with,
yes,
the burden of work that they carry, and then put COVID on top of that. So if you have a setting now where you are shifting the responsibility, as it were, onto the community members themselves, that eases, I see it as a way to ease the burden on the healthcare system. Maybe not immediately, because like you say, you're teaching people how to deliver the messages. So that sort of train the trainer approach. But I see in the long run that this has potential to keep filtering through the community.
Yeah.
Whilst we are on the subject of contributors or risk factors for cardiovascular disease, let's just briefly talk about stress. I don't think that we can end this program without mentioning the impact of stress on persons' lives, cardiovascular disease included.
Yeah. So, I mean, stress definitely has an impact on cardiovascular disease. We tend to think about it in several ways that it has an impact. One, it can be an immediate trigger. So an immediate trigger for a heart attack. You know, somebody's quarreling and the proverbial old touching your chest. So an immediate trigger. It can be an immediate trigger to send your blood pressure up and get stroke. But then there's also the long-term stress. There is the stress that, you know, increases your cortisol levels and, you know, work through your hormones and increases your risk of diabetes and works that way. Yes. And there's also the indirect effect of stress where we have stress. We don't admit it that we have stress, but we decide that we're going to drink some alcohol, just a little glass or two every night. Yeah. And then it turns into three or four. And alcohol increases our risk of blood pressure, doesn't it? It increases our risk of cancer, doesn't it? But you didn't tell me how it's cardioprotective, but I can also tell you about many of the increased risk from alcohol as well. Or, you know, you have stress and you decide that you're going to stress eat. And after you're stress eating, you gain weight. So stress also works in that way. So there are many ways by which stress affects our heart disease. I said the immediate trigger, you're having stress, you're having a quarrel, the heart attack or the stroke. The stress working and to increase your cortisol levels and therefore increasing your risk of diabetes, or your stress levels, causing you to stress eat the chocolate. Not that I'm talking about self necessarily, but a little chocolate makes you feel a little better when you're a little stressed. It's when you overeat, overeat, and then you gain weight. That's then long term as a result of that stress. We manage our stress poorly in terms of drinking alcohol, or we don't have the social support that is necessary to manage that stress, and therefore we turn to isolation and whatever, and depression, all those things in terms of our mental health. So stress is major, but it's really most of the effects of stress are how we manage that stress. So one person could have stress and manage it in a positive way, like for example, going to church or just going to a party, socializing with friends, you know, sitting down and having
within limits.
Yes, I didn't say go to the party and drink and binge drink. Yes, but socializing with friends and family and so on, having that release that you need, that can be a very positive way of managing stress. But when we go into our negative ways of managing stress, then absolutely it increases our heart disease. So you have to think about positive ways of managing stress.
Yeah, and another one of my, I don't want to say pet peeves, but one of the things that I am very passionate about is the social perception of mental health, where it's a shame to have a mental health disorder and persons don't want to go and seek health care.
Yes.
And yes. So they suffer in silence, and yes. We are surprised when somebody commits suicide or somebody attempts suicide, yes. Or when there is domestic violence and so on, because we don't go and get the help that we should get, yes. When we need to get it. So we are imploring those persons. We understand that COVID-19 has been challenging like nothing we've ever experienced in life. As a matter of fact, I think in this generation, only those persons who are probably in like their 90s would have experienced like the depression back in the 1930s or thereabout and be able to discuss that. But we've never experienced anything like this at all, most of us. And it must be bothering us in different ways, but mm-hmm. We certainly have to look for those positive outlets that you have just mentioned to us. So to begin to wind down, Dr. Sobers, you know, as I was here thinking, Gracie, you know what I forgot to do?
What's that?
I have not done this for 3 weeks, and I forgot to give the numbers. But just in case you want to call in our last 10 minutes.
We had one or two.
434.
Go ahead. 434.
434-1790.
Right.
And 266-4862.
Yes, correct.
For the WhatsApp. I can't believe I forgot that.
That's all right. Some we had some WhatsAppers. Yeah, we had a couple WhatsAppers. A couple of them were a couple of them were directed at Dr. Sobers' comment about the marriage. Married men living longer. And funny enough, they identified themselves as females, and they wanted to know what study it was that Dr. Sobers was quoting. Because they had me cracking up, and a caller as well had me cracking up as well about that same comment.
I didn't say married women live longer, you know.
Right.
I said married men.
Right, yes. And the women were wondering what study you were quoting.
What study? Oh.
Anyhow.
Yeah, it's not a Barbadian study, so maybe it's different in Barbados. I don't know. because it's not a Barbadian study.
I am looking for it as we speak, Dr. Sobers. I'm looking for it. Very quickly.
And there was a WhatsApp who asked Dr. Sobers to repeat the email address you gave earlier. You had given an email address?
Yes, we were going to do that.
Right.
We're going to do it at the end so that the listeners take that home.
Right, right. So that's one of the things we're asking for. And another one, you were speaking about salt in the saucepan with the salt meat and that sort of stuff. Another one was suggesting that it's not only on that sort of occasion, but also in simple breads and biscuits that we have nowadays. That,
yes.
You know, right?
Yes.
A WhatsApper was suggesting that as well. And this one says, hello, Gredston, single men who... Oh, here we go again. Single men who live alone rely on their own independent judgment in making decisions concerning their health. In a union, his partner is part of the process and brings her own unbiased and straightforward input to bear on how these decisions are made. I don't understand that. That's probably misspelled. She's something the rest have a vested interest in the husband's welfare. So I guess they're supporting what you were saying, that the lady would have a...
Yes, they are. Right, they're probably married. Yes, I'm supporting what I'm saying, yes.
Go ahead, please.
I found two.
You found two?
Yes, these are just the snippets. This one says that, and this is from Harvard, so we see Harvard as being a reliable resource and source of information. And so
they're actually the funders for my study.
Oh, okay. So over a 17-year period, married men survived far longer, and this is, they're saying, an average of 69 months, so that's just over 5 years, than separated and widowed men, who only about half of that. And men who had never married had an intermediate survival rate. So those who were married, over 5 years, those who were widowed, just about 3 years, and those who had never married were somewhere in the middle. That's one. And the next one said that tying the knot is tied to longer lifespan, and new data shows. Married men in 2017 had a death rate of 943 in every 100,000 as compared to 2,239 for those persons who were not married.
Wow.
So this is not Dr. Sobers or myself. This is
it is not. I'm telling you, married men live longer. And, you know, we could talk about this, you know, but it's true.
Ken Husbands was
look
even
at
chiming.
At married women, though. It's kind of sad.
Yeah. Dr. Boyce, Ken Husbands was even women. Chiming in on it. But he was all jokes.
Hi, Ken.
It was all jokes where that was concerned. But anyhow.
Actually, I was at the end of the show. Yeah. Uh-huh. At the end of the show, I have to tell Ken something. Yeah,
but so that's interesting information, though. And I assume that you're basing this on the fact that the spouse, the wife, would encourage the male, who people say are reluctant to go to a doctor.
Yeah.
She more often than not would pay a better attention to the gentleman's health than he would.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
That is one of the that's one of the mechanisms that the women improve men's health seeking behavior. Yeah.
As opposed to the belief that they torture them with nagging and that sort of stuff, right?
That there's no evidence to suggest that.
That's what one of the women told me earlier. That is what one of the women said to me earlier that was asking a question.
I don't know.
I believe you mean that's what they told me. So anyhow, you carry on, Dot.
Yes, so we were asking Dr. Sobers for her last few thoughts regarding the program. And then when you're finished, we want you to give those numbers again and the email address so that those persons who are listening can feedback to their leaders or the leaders themselves, and they can make contact with you to have the program spread to other churches and other social institutions when the time is right.
Yeah. So, I mean, we started out by just pointing out how COVID has changed the way that we interact with the healthcare system. And that has no doubt had an impact on the way that we manage NCDs. Some of us are concerned that might mean, increasing rates in things like heart attacks and strokes and so on. We haven't necessarily seen that yet, but we don't want it to get there. So we have to go back to basics and start thinking about prevention. Start thinking about community-based care and self-management support as part of the things, the tools that we use to manage chronic diseases. Yes, we have our healthcare system. The healthcare system has to be responsible. The government has to be responsible, but the community has a part to play. Community centers have a part to play. Community-based organizations like churches have a part to play, and people can be taught how to better manage their diseases, because we are living with our conditions. We live with our chronic diseases every day. The doctor only sees us every 3 to 4 months. So the best way to manage our conditions is for us to do so with support, of course, not just by ourselves. So with marital support, family support, with church support. We've just chosen churches as our pilot because churches have a structure. And you spoke about the fact that many of these programs have been started and they die out. And part of that reason is because perhaps they're trying to start from scratch. So we're using an existing mechanism. Churches already think about people's well-being in terms of their spiritual well-being. Churches have a history of thinking about educational well-being. And so now we are using that platform and thinking about people's health, physical health well-being through the church. And church leaders have been very supportive of this program, allowing us to come in to give educational talks and so on, but also to intervene at the level of screening and offering these workshops in churches. And so we have been starting to do that. We are hoping to improve the sustainability of the program by training church workers to be healthcare advocates, training church workers to be workshop leaders themselves, so that this program can be sustainable. We're just at the beginning, and we want people who are interested, church leaders in the beginning who are interested, to WhatsApp us, call us at 285-2027. We want persons to email us at htncontrol_churches@outlook.com. So that's htncontrol_churches@outlook.com. If you email us or WhatsApp us, we will get back to you to just talk about how we can best engage your church. We think of the churches are far and wide, have various ways of interacting. So it's best for us to have a conversation about how best to interact with the church.
Dr. Sobers, I wish to say a very big thank you for a wonderful show, very informative, very eye-opening for many of our listeners, our male listeners.
And let me just interrupt you here a second, please, to let you know that they're still commenting on this. And there were a couple of calls. Obviously, we couldn't accommodate them because we're out of time, but they called just at the death. So those of you who didn't get through this week, we do apologize because time is upon us. And just another confirmation to Dr. Sobers. This one says, Gretchen, wonder why you think it's so hilarious. God willing, my husband and I will be married for 50 years on July 31st, and he will be 75 on August 3rd. So I think that person suggesting that what you're saying, Dr. Sobers, is indeed correct. So to all those married people, yes, please, I am not making fun at what Dr. Sobers said. It was just, hard to believe, that's all. But anyhow, carry on, wrap up, Dr. Boyce. Go ahead.
Well, let's take an opportunity to wish that couple a very happy anniversary when it does come around. And we hope that they live to see many more anniversaries, very many more healthy anniversaries.
Healthy anniversaries.
So, yes. So you have been listening to the Better Health Radio Show. Again, we had a wonderful time with Dr. Natasha Sobers. I am your host, Dr. Renee Boyce, and we will be back, Lord willing, next week. All things being equal, no hurricanes, no press conferences, nothing of the sort. We will be back here next time, this time, well, an hour before this time, at 6 o'clock, to give you another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. Over to you, Gaston.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Boyce. Thank you, Dr. Sobers.
Go ahead.
Yes, Ken.
Yes, I forgot to say hello to Ken. I haven't heard you for a bit, Ken, so I'm saying hello. That's it. Hi, Ken.
All the news I'm getting from the good doctors that Dr. Boyce bring on here is telling me that LXPERS, what did I think? what was it that married men live longer? Poor me one. Anyhow.
Yes, and that those persons and those who don't get enough sleep. When we had Professor Roach on,
yeah,
those
that's a problem for me as well. Yeah.
Sooner too.
Yep.
So guys, see, you're about to check out.
Oh my goodness, let me knock on wood. Quick. Thank you, Dr. Boyce. Thank you, Dr. Sobers. God's willing, like Dr. Boyce said, next week we'll have another edition of the Better Health Radio Show, and Dr. Boyce will be around to bring you another live edition. Thank you, ladies, and have a good evening. All right, you're listening to The Voice of Barbados. Thank you. Take care.